Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. A new research shows that a ring coated with an anti-AIDS drug and inserted in a woman's private part once a month partially protects against HIV infection. The Aspire HIV Protection Study looked at whether a silicone vaginal ring that continuously released the drug dapivirine could protect against HIV infection. The ring reduced the risk of HIV infection by 27% in the study population overall and by 61% among women ages 25 years and older. The study was launched in 2012 and data collection continued until September 2015. Well, on today's program, we'll discuss this study and more on research and innovation to prevent HIV infection. Joining us via phone from Johannesburg, South Africa, is Dr. Tesla Palani Phillips, Aspire Study Protocol Co-Chair and Director of Network Trials with WITS Reproductive Health and HIV Institute, part of the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. Dr. Tesla Palani Phillips, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you with us. Let me remind our listeners who are joining us that if you have any comments, you can call 202-619-3111 and you can ask the operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on facebook.com/voahealthchat. And we will start our discussion shortly. But first, VOA's Sebastian Mofu takes a look at efforts by the Zimbabwe government to fight HIV in the country.
The Minister of Health Friday launched the program in Bulawayo, the country's second largest city. The survey is known as the Zimbabwe Population-Based HIV Impact Assessment, or ZIMFIA for short. The government says the results will serve as a baseline to measure progress toward the United Nations treatment targets designed to end the AIDS epidemic. Officials also say the findings will help to focus programs and resources toward populations at greatest risk for HIV and in most need of services. Dr. Mutsa Mangara is one of the people heading up the program.
Both results, HIV negative or HIV positive, both are linked to either prevention initiatives or care, treatment and support. ZIMFIA aims also to measure the population level access to HIV services like health facilities. These are some of the things which we'll be measuring to say to what extent our population getting these services.
ZIMFIA is part of an initiative being funded by the US-based Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and supported by PEPFAR, the US President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. Dr. Beth Taipet Barr is the CDC country director in Zimbabwe and says so far the survey is going on well.
So Zimbabwe is the first of 20.
Yeah, so far it's going very well. It's been implemented in 3 provinces already and now coming here. It'll be interesting to see in Bulawayo. This is the first time ZIMFIA has come into an urban environment. In some ways it might be easier because people are closer together. In some ways it might be harder because people tend to be very busy and running in different directions trying to get everything done. So we'll see. We certainly hope that the work that's going into community mobilization and raising awareness of ZIMFIA will pay off in terms of people agreeing to participate.
The survey was formally launched in Harare in September. The joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, or UNAIDS, estimates that Zimbabwe has an HIV adult prevalence of 15%. It says about 1.6 million there are living with the AIDS virus. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Dr. Tesla, again, thank you for joining us. We heard approach that the Zimbabwe government is doing in addressing the HIV epidemic in Africa, in their country specifically. Now, research and development is something that many people agree, is necessary in advancing this fight against HIV/AIDS. Let me have your thought quickly on what you think in terms of where we are in research and development before we move forward with your research.
Yeah, I think there's much that needs to be done. Clearly, you know, HIV prevention, treatment and care, there's so much of work going on. With the HIV prevention front, we definitely need options that fit easily into people's lives, that women and men can use without stigma, and that they're able to incorporate and make just a normal day-to-day practice in their lives. And so, like in the world of contraception, we have multiple options for women, such as injectable contraception, tablets and implants. In the HIV prevention field and in research and development, I think it's critically important we also look at a wide spectrum of options for delivery of prevention agents.
And wide spectrum of options, as you mentioned. One of the things that is being developed, as I mentioned earlier in opening the program, is the study, the Aspire HIV Protection Study, which involves women, and which is a study that you are actually the protocol co-chair of this study. Now, can you explain to us what is this study about?
Okay, so the Aspire trial was a phase 3 clinical trial that aimed to assess whether the dapivirine vaginal ring, which I think has been in the media for a few days now, is able to safely and effectively prevent HIV infection in young women. So, you know, it basically contains an antiretroviral drug called dapivirine, which acts by preventing multiplication of the virus in the human body. And so the trial basically was conducted across multiple countries, and it's interesting that you had somebody from Zimbabwe on, because Zimbabwe was one of the participating countries, and also included representation from Malawi, Uganda, and South Africa. So clearly countries that are hard hit by the HIV virus.
And is dapivirine a drug that is already being used by people infected by HIV or to prevent?
No, it's actually not in a commercial use. It was sponsored to us by a pharmaceutical company. It basically was originally developed by Janssen Sciences in Ireland, and they were initially called Tibotec Pharmaceuticals. And in 2004, they granted a royalty-free license to the International Partnerships for Microbicide, which is a non-profit product development group based in U.S. and in South Africa, to develop dapivirine as a microbicide for women in developing countries.
Okay. And so this ring basically is something that women insert in the private part, and then can you explain to us how this works, this process?
Okay. Yeah, sure. So for those not familiar, let me explain what a vaginal ring is first. So the vaginal rings are generally flexible products that fit high inside the vagina and allow the slow, continuous delivery of the drug or multiple drugs over a period of weeks or months. So people in the U.S. and Europe may be familiar with the concept because the vaginal rings are used and licensed there for contraception delivery and hormone replacement. And the nice thing about this intervention is that women can be taught, and did in our trial, insert and remove the ring themselves. Now, the dapivirine ring is designed to offer potentially long-acting protection against HIV. How the ring functions is that it contains about 25 milligrams of the antiretroviral drug, dapivirine, and when it's placed inside the vagina, the ring slowly releases the drug over the course of 4 weeks. Now, this is great for a couple of reasons. The one is that women can insert it and remove it as and when they need to. Ideally, you need to keep it in for the entire 4 weeks to have that month of protection. But also, a woman can use it around her lifestyle. It's concealed. She doesn't need any support from medical personnel, and so it's a woman-controlled HIV prevention intervention.
Okay, and so how easy or how difficult? Well, you said that a woman will learn how to insert it, obviously. But let's talk about the ring itself. How long did it take to develop such a ring with the dapivirine? Do you have an idea of the time it took from conception to development?
Yes. So the development history of the dapivirine ring, as I said, the International Partnerships for Microbicides are the regulatory sponsor for the trial. So they brought the dapivirine ring from concept to the phase 3 trial that we just completed in just 7 years. Now, that's not a very long period of time. In 2004, IPM embarked on an extensive program of preclinical assessments of dapivirine in various formulations. And by that, I mean they assessed it in the gel form and different ring forms. And what they aimed to do was to provide discrete, long-acting protection to women. So they eventually prioritized the ring formulation in 2010. They then collaborated with other partners to develop and evaluate different prototypes of rings. So the ring that you see now has really evolved from other examples of rings that they had initially, ultimately advancing to the current design that we tested in these phase 3 trials.
Okay. Now, what did the study entail?
So the study basically entailed ensuring that women in our communities were screened and enrolled and were given access to the ring. So the Aspire, just for people that may not be familiar why we use the term Aspire, it stands for a study to prevent infection with the ring for extended use. And it was also called the MTN-020 microbicide trial. So as I mentioned earlier, we wanted to assess whether it was safe and effective protecting women against HIV when used a month at a time. Mm-hmm. We enrolled about 2,500 women that were HIV negative from 15 clinical research sites in the 4 countries, Malawi, Uganda, South Africa, and Zimbabwe. And we also helped make sure that the study participants were able to find the ring practical and easy to use within the context of the daily lives.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me, who were the women that were recruited for this? Was it determined that they were at risk of HIV, that's why they were chosen, or any woman was able to register?
So women in the community were recruited in quite a diverse number of ways. As I mentioned, we worked across 4 countries, and so there was quite a diverse mix of recruitment strategies. But basically, any woman in the community that felt she was at risk of HIV infection was permitted to screen for the trial. In our communities, the definition of high risk is quite subjective, because with where we have high rates of HIV prevalence, where every first or second woman that you meet will very likely be HIV infected already, it immediately, demarcates our countries to be at risk of HIV infection. I think everybody acknowledges that women are predisposed to a greater risk of HIV infection, and according to the current stats, more than 60% of people infected with HIV are women. So, making sure that the women in the community were educated about the potential to be in the study and to be part of a group of women that would help assess this intervention was critically important. So women would come in after education in the communities and provide informed consent, where we would explain all of the procedures in the language of their choice. So it would either be English or a local language in South Africa or any of the other countries, just to make sure that they understood exactly what they were getting into.
Now, how did the study team ensure the safety of the participants, especially there were 2 groups according to my understanding. Can you explain that first, and perhaps it would make more sense that I ask my question. How was the study conducted?
So in terms of the 2 groups that you mentioned, it's critically important in any of our research to be able to compare our findings to an equivalent where an intervention didn't exist. And so what we use in clinical trials is something called a placebo or a dummy. Mm-hmm. And so the 2 groups that you mentioned were people that were randomized, like throwing a dice, where we allocate people to different arms of the study. And so the one group were people on the placebo arm, so they would receive a ring that looked identical to the ring that contained the dapivirine, except it didn't contain the drug. And then the people on what we call the active arm were people who received the ring that did contain the drug. So in terms of ensuring safety, we're governed by ethics committees, we're governed by very high good clinical practice guidelines to make sure that our conduct of studies is extremely safe, ethical, and we conduct our studies to the highest level. So when it comes to comparisons or the assessment of safety or management of safety, people in the trial were treated in exactly the same way, regardless of whether they were on the dapivirine arm and the placebo arm. And so how we went about ensuring that this was non-biased is that we conducted what we call a double-blind placebo-controlled trial. In simple terms, this means that neither the study staff nor the study participants were told which product they were getting. And in terms of their management on an ongoing basis, they were treated for the same STIs, they were given the same assessments clinically, the same counseling, regardless of study arm. So you could compare the only difference between these two groups and how they were treated would be the presence of the drug or not in the rings that they received. So throughout the study, we had access to international and local doctors. All of the clinical trial sites had well-qualified, trained medical doctors and nurses running the clinics. And we also had an international group that would look in at our safety every few months to make sure it is fine, and on a daily basis as well. So safety was the priority, and the good news is that the trial completed with no safety concerns.
Okay, and Dr. Tesla, we are going to continue our show after a short break, and we have more questions for you to understand this very interesting study. We will be right back, so please stick with us and we'll continue our conversation. It's now time for the break, and we'll take a short break. But before then, here's the news with Sanusi Diallo.
Good morning. The Free National Ambulance Service offered to rural Ethiopian has reduced the number of pregnancy-related deaths in the country by half. The ambulance program, which is run by the Ethiopian government and started with an initial investment of 50 million, is offered in every rural district operating 1,254 wheels drive ambulance 24 hours per day every day of the week. To reach their conclusion, researchers compare pregnancy-related deaths in six randomly selected rural regions of Ethiopia. Areas where the ambulance service was used heavily had a pregnancy-related mortality rate of 149 per 100,000 live birth, compared to 350 per 100,000 in regions where the service was not used. Writing in a journal of global health, researcher from Umeå University in Sweden say the cost-effective service could serve as a model for other sub-Saharan African nations. New research gives the first evidence that Zika virus might cause a severe neurological disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome. The disease leads to muscle weakness and, in severe cases, breathing problems requiring intensive care. The study was carried out using blood samples from 42 patients who became ill in a previous outbreak. The Lancet authors say they developed the neurological problem around 6 days after Zika infection. It is a rare response to infection, which sees the immune system affecting peripheral nerves. A new app to help doctors with the referral for patients suspected of having cancer has been launched. It features a quick reference guide for health professionals, including information on symptoms, sign, and image of what to look out for. The app can be continually updated when the user is in a Wi-Fi zone, giving them the latest information as quickly as possible. It can also be used offline. It was produced by the Scottish Centre for Enabling Technology, based at the University of the West of Scotland. It is available as a free download via the Apple and Google and App Store. And that's a wrap up for the latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, we are discussing today the Aspire HIV Protection Study. And our guest is Dr. Tesla Palani Phillips. She is the Aspire Study Protocol Co-Chair and Director of Network Trials with WITS Reproductive Health and HIV Institute, part of the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. I hope I'm saying these words right. I know these are Afrikaans.
You're doing a great job.
Great. So, Dr. Tesla, listen, we have a couple of questions here. And one of them is from Anna in Kenya. She says, what were the results of the study? Was the ring effective?
Yes. So the results of the study, and I need to mention our sister study, the ring study, which I think needs to be considered in light of what I'm about to say. Because in order to license products, we generally need two parallel phase 3 trials. So as far as the one trial, and the second trial I'll talk about is the RING study, which was also conducted with 1,900 plus women in Uganda and South Africa, just in terms of an update. So the great news to share is that each study found that the monthly dapivirine ring can safely help protect women against HIV infection. Now, in Aspire, the Dapivirine ring reduced the risk of HIV infection by 27% overall, and in the ring study, infections were reduced by 31%. Aspire showed a greater level of protection for women over 21, and that was at the level of 56%, which was supported by a trend in the ring study, exhibiting more protection in women at the age at that age group, at 37%. Now, across both studies, the interesting thing that we did find was that women between the ages of 18 to 21 had little to no protection. And when we looked at the reasons for this, we found that the women were actually not using the ring as consistently as we would have liked, and so there were very low drug levels in the vaginal area to protect them from HIV infection. So taken together, you know, we saw a similar trend in the ring study. Low levels of efficacy or protection with inconsistent ring use. But taken together, it suggests that the ring needs to be used consistently to offer protection. And very importantly, that this ring is an acceptable means of HIV prevention for women in our countries, in Africa.
Okay, great. And another question from Philip. In Zambia, he would like to know, were some women infected after the trials?
So the women that became infected during the trial were not discontinued from the trial. Sorry, could you just repeat the question? Did you say where did they go?
Were some women infected during the trial?
Yes. Yeah, so remember, we conduct placebo-controlled randomized trials. So generally in our communities, women are being infected and affected by HIV every day. So half of the women in our study were actually on a placebo product, and so there would have been zero protection. And if they were unable to use condoms and ensure they were treated for sexually transmitted infections, they would have acquired infection as a consequence. And, you know, we did have infections even for women that were randomized to the active product because of inconsistent use and for a host of other issues that we're still investigating. So, yes, there were infections in both the study arms. The 27% reduction is a relative risk reduction compared to the placebo arm of the trial.
So then the women that were infected, what will happen with them? Are they being followed by the study, or even after the study, are they being taken care of, or what happened to these women?
So the women that, you know, as I mentioned earlier around the process of informed consent, when the women in the study became HIV positive, they were offered enrollment into a sub-study, which in the microbicide trial network is called MTN-015, where we enroll the women with informed consent, and it's not an automatic thing. She has to provide her written consent to go into MTN-015. And basically there what we do is we follow up the women that were HIV, became HIV positive in the trial, and we make sure that we follow them up for a period of time to look at what is the impact of that first exposure to an antiretroviral in a trial. How do they respond to treatment when they get initiated, and how do they progress with HIV infection? And that study is currently ongoing. The RING study had a similar study where people that seroconverted were offered enrollment and followed up into, you know, how they progressed with HIV.
Now, you gave the numbers 27%, 31% for women over 21. It seems like it was more effective. And you said that between 18 and 21, there was little or no protection. The reason being that they did not use it regularly. Does it have to do with their body, or it's just because they did not use it regularly? Because I find it interesting that it's a specific age range group.
Yeah, so just like in other prevention, you know, studies, and if you look at contraception use, if you look at HIV treatment, we generally are seeing the similar trend where the younger women in our communities and younger men are less likely to be adherent to an intervention. Initially in this study, we were able to detect the levels of use by assessing the blood. And so in this particular study, we found low levels of drug in this age range. So in order for there to be drug in your body, you'd need to have been using the ring. But there's also a host of other issues that we need to consider, and future studies that we will be pursuing are going to look at specifically what are the issues around young women in our studies' lack of adherence. You know, you come into a clinical trial, you're seeking help, you're afraid of HIV potentially. So what changes in that period that leads you to not use an intervention that potentially could protect you. You know, the young groups in our communities are very influenced by a range of issues, and so it's critical for us in HIV prevention research and in any medical research or social research to ask these questions directly to these young people to help strategize around a method that they could use where we can reduce the risk of infection in this age range.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the initial goal, or what were the goals initially, and did the results meet your expectations as a team?
As a team, we're extremely excited about these results. Clearly, if the percentage of protection was higher, we would be ecstatic. But this is the first time we have two phase 3 trials with results showing that a female-controlled HIV prevention method can safely help reduce new infections in women, a population for whom there are very few options in Africa. Consider that in these two studies, one-third of the women in the depovirine group did not acquire HIV. In other words, one in three women who would have been infected in our communities were saved. Now, these are women who would have not been protected otherwise. Furthermore, amongst those who used the ring more consistently, we had levels of protection by up to 50%. So our work, you know, we're extremely excited about this, but our work is not done. We still need more options for women, and we must focus on better understanding and addressing the needs of our young cohort that were not protected, especially, as you mentioned earlier, those that were under 21.
Now, the phase 3 trial in a process of drug or treatment development is very advanced in terms of trying to see the efficacy and so on. What will happen next with the rings? What's next on the agenda?
So I'm sure everybody wants to know, when can they get access to the ring? So potentially, to get the ring into women's hands, we need to follow a couple of steps. We first need to seek approval for its public use by global and national regulatory authorities, who review a complete and comprehensive dossier of scientific evidence to make their determination. So the International Partnership for Microbicides, or the IPM, plans to seek regulatory review for the depovirine ring licensure based on the results of the ring study and the Aspire study, as well as a host of several small studies that have been taking place in the United States, in Europe, and around the world. So IPM anticipates being able to submit this dossier of evidence on the ring to the regulators later this year in 2016. Now, this is an important and complex process that takes time, especially for a new chemical entity like depovirine for use in healthy women. And the purpose, what we have in the interim, is planned what we have open label extension studies, or OLE studies. And what these studies intend to do is to provide participants who are in the ring study and the Aspire study access to depovirine ring while it's under regulatory review. These OLE studies will also help us collect important information about how the ring is used in a real-world situation and inform its broader rollout once we get through to the licensure stage.
Okay, and before we wrap up, because we're almost at the end of the show, what other aspects of this research, or was there an aspect of this research that was significant to you personally?
Yes, I mean, I'm from Johannesburg in South Africa, and so HIV is not something that's distant or remote to me. You know, people that come into our clinic suffer from HIV, they're either on treatment or they're HIV free. And in our communities, the burden of HIV is so huge. And so if I can be, and if my team at the clinic and the doctors and nurses and community teams in all these the Aspire sites have managed to achieve collectively a one-third reduction in HIV infection, I think that's a huge impact in our community. So, you know, critically, as research scientists, we try and put in as much as we can into relevant research. I'm very happy and humble to say that we really do believe that if this ring does go through to licensure, if we're able to go through with the many studies we have planned, it clearly will impact HIV rates in our country and in our continent in Africa.
Okay, Dr. Tesla, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
And have a good night in Johannesburg. It's evening there already.
Thank you.
And we thank our guest, Dr. Tesla Palani Phillips. She's Aspire Study Protocol Co-Chair and Director of Network Trials with VITS Reproductive Health and HIV Institute in Johannesburg, South Africa. For more on today's program, log on to our website at voanews.com and keep the conversation going on facebook.com/healthchatvoa. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vungani and Sanyisi Diallo for the news. Take care. Be well and strive to make every day a healthy day. Until next time.